Be good.
Well, hey, hi, howdy, hello there, friends. Welcome back to the program. It's your pal, Andrew, and I'm bringing you this episode of the Monkey Tooth Podcast today from what is essentially my sick bed. I'm going to keep this real brief. I got a cold, and I feel like shit, but I would feel even worse if I didn't give some love to this pal of mine, this guest, this friend, this lady, Sarah Kate Larson. She is super sweet, very talented, makes beautiful stuff, production design, murals, art projects, is just all around creative and good at what she does, and she's very thoughtful and has had a hell of a journey. You can listen to her previous episode on this program. It's in the archives. You can search on our website. That's mtp.dog, Sarah Kate Larson. So even though I've seen her since then, we picked up and talked about some of the things we talked about last time and some things we haven't talked about, which was nice for me. You can find out all about Sarah at her website. That's Sarah with an H, S-A-R-A-H, katelarson.com, sarahkatelarson.com. If you got a project and you need someone smart and artistic and cool, she's the one. Give her a shout. What else? Glenn. Remember Glenn from the Raised by Whoops fake radio show? He started his own podcast. It's called Catching My Reflection. It's available now on Spotify. I'll put a link in this show, so if you want to follow old Glenn and hear what he's doing, he's writing songs. He's going to be writing 2 songs a month. You're welcome to send in your own tunes. I'm happy for him. I hope it does really well, and I hope he has like a great time writing tunes. He's a talented guy. Okay, I'm going to get off here and go drink hot liquid and lay down. That's what you're supposed to do, right? I hope you're doing fun and interesting things and that this cold treats you well. If you get it, sure hope you don't. Until next time, adios. It's good to see you.
Yeah, you too.
Yeah. Happy, what is today, Tuesday?
Yep. I almost thought you were about, it's my birthday tomorrow, so I thought you were going to say happy birthday.
Oh.
Yeah.
What happened? Happy birthday to you.
Thank you.
do you want to say how old you are?
I'm going to be 35.
Nice. Well, so yeah, there's a ton of stuff I want to talk to you about now because it's been, you know, a bunch of years since you were on the show. Art, obviously. Your newfound love and skill with power tools. Third thing I want to talk to you about is, if you're okay with talking about it, is your spiritual life. Because I know when we talked, you were sort of on this, you've been on a journey of the faith you grew up with, that like rejection of faith altogether. And then finding sort of a spiritual balance. And the last time I talked to you, you seemed to be on a very specific journey. Are all three of those things something you want to talk about?
Yes. I'm still an open book.
Good. Awesome. I want to talk to you about art. Because when I met you, your art was lots of murals, which I really like. You still do that. You still paint a lot.
Yes.
But since then, you've gotten into more sculptural elements.
I wouldn't call it sculptural,
okay,
like in the traditional sense, but just building. It's more constructional.
Structural. Yeah, there we go.
Structural, constructural.
Structural art, though, because it's not just like you're building a thing to use. Mm. It's useful, but it's also a piece of art.
Yeah, I got into building furniture. That's out of desire for patio furniture and then looking at how expensive it was.
Yeah.
And just and the desire too, and being like, you know what, I think I can make it myself. And yeah, starting there, I made a kitchen table with a drop leaf, which I was really proud of. Yeah, not as much like furniture as I would like. I had been planning on doing it this month, but all this rain that we're getting is preventing me.
Is it raining there right now?
As we speak, it has been nonstop. Well, it might have let up briefly. But yeah, it's been constant the last like 2 days.
So I guess what I'm clumsily asking about is, mm-hmm. Like, I know you're making like functional stuff that you're going to use,
mm-hmm.
but like there's something about the way you approach it. It's like a blending of, in my estimation, could be totally off base, a blending of your natural sort of playful creativity
mm-hmm.
and doing something useful and functional. So where is there an intersection between like your art and this stuff, or is it just there's stuff and there's art and they never will they touch?
An intersection? Well, like, yeah, if I'm making it, I consider it art.
that's what I'm talking about.
Even if it's functional, I'm having fun in a very similar to the same capacity. It, like almost not more so, but differently if it's functional. Because it's like an extra bit of satisfaction.
Your philosophy on art. Like, how would you, if someone said, hey, hi, I'm 5. I don't know what anything is. What's art? What would you tell a 5-year-old?
Oh, my goodness.
How would you give that definition?
Oh, no. I didn't like study art philosophy or anything like that in college.
Even better.
I mean, there's people who say, like, anything's art. And I guess there's truth to that. You can make an art out of anything, you know, putting a certain amount of attention and dedication. Like in Chinese philosophy, I learned that the term kung fu is not just about how we think of kung fu as a martial art. It's a word used to describe a mastering of anything. So you can have kung fu in cooking, kung fu in painting, and et cetera. And I like that concept. And I think if you are taking a creative approach to what you are doing, then you could call it art.
Perfect. See, yeah. You didn't need to go to school for that. You already got it in your brain. I mean, I feel like the reason I brought up a child.
Yeah.
I feel like that's a big part of what you do is you approach it with like a childlike, a joy, right? I mean, it seems like when you were showing me the stuff that you made.
Yeah.
And then when you put it on Instagram and you show what you're doing, it just looks like you're playing, like you're mm-hmm. having a good time.
Yeah.
So that's awesome.
Yeah. That's if I were to give advice to like a budding artist, it would be to do that. Yeah. To turn it into play or remind yourself, because I think kids do it naturally. Like to tell a kid what art is, like they know. Like kids will just doodle and like be really proud of a scribble and, you know.
right.
And they're just doing it. But yeah, it's more of the adults that need to be reminded that it can be fun. I had to reteach myself that. I didn't do art for years. I had a lot of pressure in high school after getting like a scholarship award. It was like got me into college for free. And I was really big into doing very hyper realistic pencil drawings and charcoal drawings where people would think they were photographs. And everyone was like, oh, you're going to become an artist. And it just turned into a chore. And then I had this weight over me of like having every piece be phenomenal. Like it was difficult to allow myself any means of messing up.
Right.
And I constantly let myself down. I felt like in college I like degressed in my artistic ability. And so I took a long break from it and I very consciously decided to loosen up. And I would let myself like sit down with a canvas or something and make something for the fun of it. Like, I'm just going to make a mess and it doesn't need to be anything. Like, let's just put some colors and some whatever the frick comes out. And doing that helped me reignite that appreciation for art as creation and play. So, yeah. I'm thank you for noticing that because it does mean a lot to me. Like, and it was an intentional move.
Yeah. But there's somewhere between like playing and the kung fu of a thing, the mastery.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's where that tension comes in and people forget, you know, that you are meant to you are meant to be mastering it or getting as good at it as you can be, mm-hmm. but without taking the joy out of it.
Yes.
How do you manage that and keep it playful, but still try to get better? Because you've improved. I've seen your furniture making improve.
Thank you.
You're taking on new skills. You're learning from other people. Like, what's the, how do you keep childlike and mastery without hating it?
Like lower expectations. and then in the act of doing it a lot and then remaining curious, like, yeah, like learning new techniques and how people do a thing and you want to do it. I think the curiosity, hanging on to that, is very important. I'm a bit eclectic. I mean, maybe less so, just through looking at the broader, you know, works I've done, but I've always felt I was a bit all over the place, and I struggled with becoming a fine artist because I found that the most successful ones had their niche and they just did it over and over and over and over again. That wasn't for me, and it's still not for me. And I instead have it's you know, looked inwards and been like, you know what, I'm going to embrace this movement. And it's funny because some people might look at it as improvement and growing, while some people might look at it as like sporadic and unfocused. I don't know.
Staying curious, to me, like that is how you learn.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, you learn, like, especially with lessons, you know, you learn by the mistake and by the accidents, mm-hmm. like, oh, I won't do that, or I'll try this instead. That's where you kind of like grow and learn. But, mm-hmm. but being curious enough to want to try the other shit,
yeah,
to me is like, that's the whole thing, right? Just being inquisitive and trying to figure it out, not approaching it like, oh, here's the best way to do it. And if I don't do that way, it's wrong.
Yeah. And I make a lot of mistakes. I just don't post them on social. I don't think most people do. Like, you're not seeing, yeah. like in a time lapse, you're not seeing me be like, oops, and then having to completely redo a thing. But like, I don't know. I enjoy the whole process. So
I've never built anything from like an IKEA table to, you know, something built from scratch, where I didn't do something backwards at least once.
Yeah.
And have to like undo multiple steps and yeah. start from wherever this mistake came in. I mean, never. I've never just from start to finish been like complete, no do-overs.
Yeah.
Never.
Yeah, exactly. It doesn't work that way. Even with like a mural, I mean, maybe there's some paintings where I've just been and it's like down. But even with a mural, I'm like, oh, how do I erase like this little bit?
Yeah.
Even the latest mural I did, I was playing with gold leaf for the very first time.
Nice.
And I like looked up like how to do it, and I did what it told me to, and it didn't stick. It was like the opposite of what I wanted it to do, where I was like, all right, I'm gonna paint leaves with glue and then stick the leaf on. And so I did, but then it spread in a way where when I tried to scrape it off, I was just scraping off where I didn't want it to scrape off, but not in a good way.
Right.
And then it just turned into like giant blobs that I was like, oh, I think it actually made it worse. And it helped when I like painted over the gold leaf. I actually like plan on doing that at some point. Because I'm not happy with it, but that's, you know, it's part of the whole process sometimes. And that's why I practice gold leaf for the first time in my own bedroom and not on a client.
Yeah. Well, speaking of clients, like it seems like, and I know I don't mean to make light of it, you know, the writer's strike was awful,
yes.
for everybody, but you, from what I could gather, at least what you put online and what I saw you doing when I was there, you kind of flourished in a different way with other projects.
Yeah.
Like, do you feel like it was kind of good for you in a way?
You know what? It was good for me in that when I wasn't landing work, it was a nice excuse. Because, you know, for your listeners, I do production design for clarification for film and things like that. But I am freelance and not union, not part of any of the film unions. And so it didn't really affect me too much. It only affected me in that there were more production designers and art directors out there looking for work at the same time as me. And so people who might have been in the game longer or have had way more connections built up, they were more apt to get jobs than someone like myself, who has only been doing it like properly for maybe 5-6 years. Not very long. But yeah, I don't know. I feel like I just got lucky. The pandemic was awful for my career. Absolutely awful. So I went like many years. How long was the pandemic? 3 years, 4 years?
10 years.
Yeah, really scraping by. And I think it's like circumstantially, it just makes sense where it's like, for how long I've been going at this, trying to build networks and what have you, that it's about time my work picked up. Mm-hmm. And it just happened to coincide with when everyone else wasn't getting work. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It does. But I mean, you do such like a unique design, and I don't know, just when you think about, especially like your home, it seems like you've done a lot of home stuff, right? In people's mm-hmm. houses. Mm-hmm. At least it looks that way. Are there like bedrooms and bathrooms and living rooms and things like that?
Yeah.
Like especially the mural stuff.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
And like a space that you're going to look at all the time.
Yeah.
I mean, God, what more could you ask for than someone who's having a good time put it together for you? If it were possible to only hire people to do things that are clearly having a good time doing it, mm-hmm. I feel like that'd be the greatest Uber service there is to, like, you know, there's like Craigslist, and then there's Kathy's list, and then there's just like happy, joyful people list. You could be right at the top. You know what I mean? Like,
oh, that would be cool.
Here's 10,000 plumbers, but there's two of them that really have a good time. It's these two plumbers you want to go for. But yeah, you definitely have a good time making people's spaces feel good. And it looks real obvious to me. At least maybe that's what you're good at on social media.
No, I genuinely enjoy it.
Are you doing as much of that stuff as you are production work, or is it leveled off?
It goes through seasons. Like, there'll be times where it's like everyone's asking me for murals, and then other times where it's production work that's keeping me going. Mm. But yeah, I recently have been asked by two separate people to do murals. So that's exciting.
Big ones or in a room? Or?
Yeah, well, one's potentially really big. I actually need to get back in touch with her, but she's got a dance studio that she moved into and was asking for a mural.
Nice.
Yeah, I'm not the best at follow-ups because sometimes that's really how it gets done.
Yeah, that's pretty big.
Yep.
That's where it's not fun.
Yeah.
It's like all the business management aspect of it. Yeah. Somebody told me once, like, if there's something you enjoy doing, just keep doing it and eventually some money will come.
Yep.
You know, because if you like it, you'll get good at it, and you're obviously already good at it. So you just need a business manager.
Yeah, I do.
Train your cat to handle that for you.
Yeah. Yeah. Can you do it?
Yeah. So... When did you start working with power tools? Like, what? Because when I met you, you didn't strike me as being like ready to build a whole thing, you know, with the skill that you're doing it now.
Yeah, I had had power tools because did I meet you after? It was the first year, my first year.
I think so. You did the big the portal.
Yes. So I built that, and that did require power tools.
You had power tools, but I'm just saying, like, your skill level for putting them to, you know, how am I going to say this in a way that doesn't sound like I'm putting down what you did? Because I really enjoyed what you made, but it just seems like you're making more complex shit than you were then. Mm. What's that about? How are you getting so good at this? Just practice, or did you like take some classes?
Nah, that curiosity we were talking about.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah. And also getting more money to where I can afford more power tools.
Right.
That's a big one. Oh my goodness. I think back of like how I cut that whole piece, like those two walls with jacks on either side, right? And I could only afford like a cheap, it was a round saw that.
Circular saw.
Yeah, circular. Yeah. I keep calling them round saws. Someone else, okay. I was on a job like talking about it. Someone's like, circular saw. I'm like, it's the same word.
Yeah, same.
A circular saw. But this one is, it was from like Harbor and Freight, where it's not the same shape as a typical one. It was like a mix between a grinder and a circular saw.
Oh, man.
And that's all I had. And I would have to do like really long cuts.
Oh, my
and it
God.
Was so sketchy. I didn't have any saw horses. And so what I would do is I would weigh down the part of the board that was longest and have it over the edge of my empty swimming pool. Like OSHA's like, no. And then I would just walk it like as steadily as I could, just like, brrr. And some of those cuts I did throughout that era of only having that as my saw were reckless. Like I was always okay. I never hurt myself, knock on wood.
Well, you certainly put it to good effect. I mean,
yes.
So it's literally just a matter of like having better, more and better tools. You feel like you can make more complex stuff.
Yeah. And I've been learning about them as I go. Like I do give some credit to my dad, like a lot of credit. I practically grew up on a construction site for a good part of my childhood. And even though my dad wasn't having me use power tools regularly, I had used a saw and I had used like one of those hydraulic nail guns as a kid, like a wee one. Yeah, but not any saws. They scared me still, you know, up until adulthood when I get my own.
Yeah. And it's wise to remain a little scared of them, or at least respectful of the damage that can be done.
100%.
Oh my God. I'm very thankful and just flat out lucky that I still have, and knock wood, all my digits.
Yeah.
I've come close. I've come very close. There's something about like building a thing from scratch, which is very satisfying. But you've done this thing where you've like found stuff that's broken or in bad shape and repaired it.
Yeah.
And that's really cool because that's skillful because it's, I mean, yeah, you are just taking out a broken piece, matching it and putting it back in. But there's more to it than that. And I like that you do that. That's like a very cool way of recycling and building and making art.
Yeah.
You just did that because you needed shit.
Yeah. Yep. Let's see. Lack of money is a creative influence.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Have you sold any pieces? Like, have you made stuff and flipped it?
Yeah, I have. Probably the biggest sell was an old Craftsman. I forget the term for it, but I sold it. I like refinished it, repaired some parts that had like come chipped off of the back and made over $1,000 on that one.
Nice.
That was cool.
Yeah. Take that when you can get it.
Yes, exactly. I probably could have made a good amount on this like I turned it into my outdoor, like a bar on wheels that I painted, and I decided to keep that one because I liked it so much.
Did I see that one? Was that there when I was there?
Maybe it was there. And it was painted with flowers and like petals along the edges. Okay, yeah.
So you kept that one?
Yeah, I kept that one.
Nice. That's a good choice. I don't want to keep just pestering you about tools and stuff, but I'm just impressed.
Like, I like talking about tools.
Yeah, I'm impressed by what you've done with it. And that sounds kind of patronizing, and I don't mean it that way. Like, like, wow, little lady, you sure are good with tools. Not where I'm coming from at all. I'm just saying, like, you know, when I met you, you were, I mean, it was a struggle, obviously. I didn't know the backstory to what you'd built and how crazily you had to do it. Just looking at that thing and what you make now, it's like an obvious, in my mind, obvious improvement of skill level and obviously tool ownership.
But, yeah.
Yeah. Curiosity is, be curious, be broke. You'll be a great artist.
Yeah. Maybe.
Maybe. Yeah.
It's not patronizing to me. Like,
okay, good.
Like, of course, like, women are capable of using power tools. It's just, there's a culture that we grew up in, at least my generation and everyone older, you know, where it's just not, it just wasn't done very, very often. It's not a culture that was fed to us. I mean, I think it was for me. My dad was very forward in that aspect, like, not shying away from the fact that his daughter seemed to like things that guys liked.
Yeah.
And helping foster it. But yeah, it's fun. I find it kind of fun. Like, just the other day on a gig, I had a friend and a coworker, and we were talking tools, and he, like, looks at me and he's like, wait, you got this, this, this? I'm like, yeah. And he's like, you're more manly than I am.
That's hilarious.
And I'm like, oh, shucks.
Oh, how sweet of you to say.
Thank you. But I'm also very feminine. Happy for it.
Tools, I guess they are, you know, they're associated with manliness, but there is, like, in the same token, like, sewing is associated with femininity, but I would love to know how to sew. Like, I've got a friend who's an artist, a guy named Josh, and he is an amazing seamster, whatever. He can sew really well. He makes, like, cool furniture, and he'll, like, upholster things, and it's always got this super cool touch. I don't know. I'd love for all that goofball stereotypical shit to just sort of melt away, and the tool is just free of gender expectation.
Yeah, I think it is. Like, what, Gen Z is doing a pretty good job of it.
Yeah, tearing it all down, rebuilding. Yeah. Nice. Do you mind talking to me a little bit about spirituality?
Not at all.
Just for context, people out there listening, I just asked Sarah to do this today and gave her I gave you nothing. I was just like, hey, call me at 5:30. And then I'm just blasting you with all this crazy stuff. So thank you for...
I don't mind it. It spiced my day up. I was just doing laundry.
The spirituality thing, like, and if people don't remember, you had a hell of a journey. You grew up Mormon, and which leaving that faith is a very scary. It's not like just like, I don't want to be Baptist anymore.
Yeah.
It's way, way more involved and takes a lot more from you. Right. Potentially, at least.
Yeah. I don't know about it. You know, the words taking it, takes a lot from you is right and wrong, where there's a lot of Mormons and probably other ex-Mormons as well who would admit that it gave back a lot.
Sure.
But it does take a lot from you in the sense of, it takes up your life. Like, so I grew up in Utah, and we would have seminary in high school and junior high. So, like, one of our class, like, our free classes would always go to a church, like, church studies. And then on a certain day of the week, I think it was Thursday for us, we would have, like, young women's. And so we would go and meet up and have, like, more church. And then, of course, Sunday was, like, 4 hours long in church. And then you have Relief Society meetings. You have home teacher meetings where someone comes to your home and gives you more church. And then you're supposed to have Monday night family home evenings reading scripture. So it was like, it's like all encompassing. It does take up more of your life than an average, you know, Catholic or Baptist or something like that.
I guess to just suddenly stop being Catholic, you just might get some disappointment from your parents. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I really wish you'd come. You might get some guilt.
Yeah.
Leaving the Mormon faith is a very different thing. I mean, it's like to suddenly stop being, if you had, like, very fundamentalist Muslim parents, and to leave that faith is like, it's just not okay, you know?
Yeah.
And you kind of went through some of that, right?
Yeah.
That's what I mean by like, it's brave, and it, you know, it takes a lot of guts to do that sort of thing. But, I'm kind of summarizing here. You went through that whole thing, like read Richard Dawkins and Christopher Hitchens and went that route of like the anti-theist thing. But you seem to come around to another understanding of all that. That's what I'm curious about. It's like, okay, you know, you had the deep indoctrination, a rejection, and then curiosity, the same thing that fuels your art, is propelling your development of spiritual self. And I'm not going to make power tool analogies, but there is probably something along those lines that we could
make a power tool analogy.
Yeah. I mean, well, you've developed and been able to afford spiritually and metaphysically more tools to explore the kung fu of becoming the best Sarah possible.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm curious about, that you're on that sort of, like, I don't know if it's enlightenment or just what do you tell me? I don't know. I'm rambling. You tell me what you're up to.
It's good rambling if it's rambling. I don't know. What am I up to? Yeah, I did do major deep dives into what is everything. what is what? Like, why?
Why?
Yeah. And I did go super atheist, even though I would still consider myself an agnostic at the time. I was agnostic leaning atheist by quite a large margin. And yes, personal experiences, having conversations like you have with other people. I don't know if I touched on this in the last podcast, but when I traveled for years, I made a point to, you know, ask other people who had strong religious beliefs, you know, why they believed what they believed. Just the conglomerate of that, it just kind of became more and more clear that there's something else. And I still don't know what that is. And I think it's hubris to act like you do.
Yeah.
But yeah, definitely more sympathetic towards religion. And even in these last couple years, more appreciative of my religious background and even Christianity as a whole. You know, a lot of that former anger has pretty much dissipated. I still get testy on the subject of tithing, but like, that's when something really gets culty, I think, is when they're demanding your money. Yeah. Like, God doesn't need your money. Save that, sweetie. It's
like, you know how hard I had to work to make this $1,000, and you just want to give God 10% of it?
To God, but really it's like tax exempt corporate-esque entities. Anyway.
Yeah, no, fair enough. I feel like I'm in a similar boat with you. I went through a lot of that with Catholicism and Christianity, and like kind of having a not angry, but it's, you know, quasi resentful sort of take on, you know, oh man, fuck all that, you know.
Yeah.
But which is to throw the baby out with the bathwater, because, you know, to take in any story and just focus on the characters and the places they go and the things they do, but not pay attention to the symbolism that they represent.
Yeah.
As Joseph Campbell said, it's like eating the menu rather than the food it represents.
Yeah, that's a beautiful quote.
Isn't that awesome? That to me just was like, okay, where have I done that in my life? And how do I get that menu out of my mouth and get some food in? Because the symbolism of these religions, these faiths, of which there are so many, that have all these similar themes, all these like characters and, you know, archetypes and stereotypes that make a broader point and that give you way more information than David had on this coat and Joshua said this and these characters did that.
Yeah, there's semantics, right?
A subtext and a point to it. There's a point to it that seems more valuable than just the story. Is that where your appreciation of religion is coming in, or are you feeling like,
yes,
I'm telling you how my thing, where are you with it?
Yeah, definitely along the same veins, but also just maybe embracing woo-woo is the term that's used in maybe playing with concepts of theology. And, you know, again, not taking it literally, but I'm like, maybe there are some things that are a little bit more literish. That's not a real word, but more literal-ish.
Yeah.
Not taking it too seriously. Like, anyone who knows me really well knows that nowadays I love to joke around about fairies. Mm-hmm. But like, again, like you're talking about symbolism, like words are symbols.
Sure.
And that's kind of my take on the word. And if you look through cultures throughout the world, there's a repeat of a certain kind of like entity that has a trickster air to it that tends to appear small when they do appear. And I had fun delving into the fact that I couldn't not find an older culture. I mean, like every bit of corner of the world has a story of entities like this that we would call them fairies and, you know, Western culture or whatever.
Nymphs and sprites.
Sprites, you know, the Japan calls them yokai, duende, like, super fun. And I'm like, I don't know, very much, very, very, very likely that they're not real, but I've had weird experiences. And I do find it intriguing that cultures literally all over the world, cultures that weren't in communication with one another, have stories that are almost identical to the old Celtic ones. And I'm not talking, you know, Tinkerbell, I'm talking sure. Like the old, you know, the fair folk.
Right.
They'll trick you or lure you into the woods and what have you. Mm-hmm. But yeah, even all of the Native American tribes have stories that right in line with stories from Ireland. So I'm like, it's fun. It's fun to play with those concepts. That's not the spirituality you're probably asking about, though.
No. It oddly enough, it relates because they're of a piece, right? I mean, these archetypes, these things that exist throughout cultures, mm-hmm. that connect everybody, that everybody has a similar take on whatever that phenomena is. And is it a symbol?
Yeah.
Is it a way to describe a thing, that an emotional thing that happens in people? You know, is someone describing a metaphysical thing that they've witnessed in reality and are trying to get people to believe it? And I mean, that's a very scary thing to have like seen something and want to explain it to everybody else. And everybody's like, this guy's nuts. What the fuck's wrong with Sarah? Talking about fairies? You know, like, there are people throughout time who have faced that horror, the dilemma of like having witnessed a thing that no one believes that they've seen.
Yeah.
So is that person crazy? Do they have extra sensory perception? Do they know something fundamental that the rest of us can't see? You know what, that type of spirituality, I think there's a few different kinds, but the spirituality that mostly interests me is that like being introspective for the sake of being good, right? Mm-hmm. To be more useful and helpful to others by understanding the self and your relationship to others and the context of you. How do you fit in and how can you be the best version of you for the sake of others? Mm-hmm. That interests me. But those symbols and all this other stuff, all this religious teaching, I think those are waypoints in that journey of introspection. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, whatever the fairy represents, whether it's a real entity or not,
yeah,
there might be an aspect of that entity that maybe we need to incorporate to be the best Sarah or to be the best Andrew or whatever.
Maybe.
Who knows?
Maybe it's not so deep. I find fun in it. The more I guess, serious form of spirituality. I, you know, that's a, it was, a, if you asked me that about 6 months ago to a year ago, I would have had a lot harder time answering it because I had gone through a period of really just letting myself down. I don't know if last time we spoke, I had started, or not spoke, but last time we did the podcast, I don't know if I had done the teacher meditation training yet.
You were, I think you were starting it. I know it was part of your deep meditation. Meditation was a big part of your daily life.
Yeah. Yeah. Just going through hard things in a relationship and, you know, dealing with difficult situations around the pandemic, and is largely the relationship. And it just kind of took me into a place that I felt very disconnected from myself and let down by myself. And I guess I wanted to bring that up as a, I don't know, message to other people, as maybe as hubris that might sound, that it's okay. Does that make sense? Like,
very much so, yeah.
It's been a big lesson for me that that journey for the self-betterment, it never ends.
Yeah.
It keeps going. Yeah, it's because I thought I was so, like, I thought I was so strong in a good space. You know, I was teaching meditation. I had no regrets, really being like, yeah, I'm fantastic. And it just took some life circumstances that were derived from really just wanting to give and share love, that dragged me through the mud and definitely went through dark night of the soul moments. And yeah, it, like, truly, if you would have had me on this podcast maybe 6, 7, 8 months ago, I might have broken down crying about, like, not being a better Sarah and, you know, sure. And not meditating anymore and yada yada yada.
Right.
Yeah.
What was it, Alan Watts or one of those guys was like, hey, if you feel like you've reached enlightenment, go home for Thanksgiving.
Go home for Thanksgiving.
You know, and that's not literally, like, yeah,
so
go through
patient.
A breakup. Yeah. Go through a breakup, lose your job,
yeah.
Go through a pandemic, and let's just see how tight those spiritual screws are in.
Exactly. You know,
it's becoming convinced that you've found the way or whatever it is. I think it's a great lesson to learn, you know, that there's always work to do.
These are the embrace of play and, you know, is part of that. It's like, you know what? Don't take it so seriously.
Yeah. Well, that's the funny thing about that play, as you mentioned it with in relation to art.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that you said you lower your expectations, but there's also, like, lowering expectation is whose expectations are they? Mm-hmm. Are they yours? Are they one that you're mapping onto yourself because you perceive it coming from others? Is it actually from others? And that's a good thing. That's, like, where that rigorous introspection comes from. It's like, who's talking to me?
Yeah.
You know, when you're talking to yourself, who are you repeating? Is it really your thoughts? Are you repeating someone else's thoughts?
Oh, yep.
You know, there's a lot of good questions to ask in there that if you feel like you definitely have the answer, you probably don't really have the answer. It's like,
yeah.
It's the asking of the question that helps you, you know, get there. Well, so you're joking with your pals about fairies. Are you still meditating? Are you back on that train or
no? I mean, like, not no entirely. Now and then I'll get some meditation in. I've just re-picked up an Alan Watts book. Like, Taoism's always been incredibly close to my heart. Like, it for me, leaving Mormonism, it was really, like, one of the first steps into coming back to a type of spirituality, is discovering Alan Watts' books.
Nice.
But yeah, I'm not going to beat myself up over it. That's that is one thing I've learned. It's like, if you want to get back into a habit, you have to have little forgivenesses for yourself not doing it.
Yeah.
And just recultivate that desire from an internally more natural place. And I tell my friends, like, seasons, right? Like, mm-hmm. It could be a long season, it could be a short season. And you're more apt to get into the season of meditation quicker if you are not berating yourself for it.
Almost anything to not berate yourself about it is a good move.
Yeah, very good move. Don't shit on yourself.
And if you do, make it funny.
Yeah, you.
You said shit on yourself.
Yeah.
To do what you want, you have to want what you're doing. You know, people are like, yes. I got to go to the gym. It's like, well, do you want to go to the gym? It's like, what do you want to do? Mm-hmm. Like, do you want to be able to go on hikes, or do you just want a six pack abs? Like, what do you want? Yeah. You got to want what it is that you're doing.
It's interesting though about the want, because you were messaging, you're mentioning earlier about the, which you,
right. Who wants
you
that?
You know, looking inwards, like, is that like society's expectation, or is there a part of you that wants to go to the gym?
Yeah.
That's still a want. Mm-hmm. And when it comes to those kind of wants, that's when you just got to fucking do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, because if you wait around to want to do some things, you're not going to ever do it.
Yeah.
And back when I was doing lots of meditation, like every night, and then teaching it as well, that's what I would say. I'm like, just do it. Just like,
right.
Small amounts. And this is true. Like, 5 minutes then. That's nothing. 5 minutes. And then you're like, well, I'm already sitting. I'm already like here on the pillow. Let's turn it to 20, 30.
All right. So are you still reading? So you got some Alan Watts books. Wisdom of Insecurity. Do you have that one?
Yeah, I read that one a while back. That was, I think, the first one I read. Yeah, it was.
My friend Dan turned me on to that one.
Yeah.
There's so many themes in what you've said about art that are running through your spiritual practice, if that makes sense. Curiosity, play, not beating yourself up about expectation with what it is you're trying to make.
Mm.
I like that it all kind of...
Not taking it too seriously.
Yeah. But still mastering it, right?
Mm.
You're still trying to get a mastery of it, whatever that means.
Mm. Still working on it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's always getting a little carved on.
I mean, what do they say? A good spiritual practice is one that you're living, right?
Yeah. I mean, the word practice doesn't mean finish. You know?
Yeah.
It's just practice. You're working on it.
I was never a fan of the, you know, my neighbors and peers who would sit down in Sunday school and be better at me at quoting scripture, right? Like, I was never good at reciting things and memorization. So in class, I was always like, and they could raise their hands and recite a whole thing and talk about, you know, this is what Jesus taught. But then out in practice, some of the kids, like, growing up that were the best at that were the ones mean to me, like picking on me at the bus stop and not at all practicing what they could recite. Yeah, that's as a young age, I witnessed that in people, and I should try not to do that myself.
My mom was in town not too long ago, and she's very Catholic. And we had that, you know, it's a discussion a million people have had a million times, but, you know, what is it about faith that is inherently good? You know, there's the practice of all these things is what is good, you know, the kindness, the love, the thing, but having a faith in a deity is not something that just makes you inherently good.
Mm.
It's a wild thing to think about that, you know, that's such a cornerstone of all these religions, is the idea that you have faith in a thing that you can't prove. I guess we all probably have that. Like, I don't exactly know how a toaster works. I certainly don't know how this works, what we're doing right now. I have faith that it's just going to keep working, you know, but,
something with satellites,
yeah, like... something, satellite, phone, Elon Musk, but that doesn't make me inherently good at using the technology. You have to practice and figure out how to do it. And it's the same with like your interpersonal goodness or not being a shitheel to people at the bus stop, which breaks my heart, man. Somebody being mean to you. Yeah. Oh my God. Like, that's terrible.
Yeah.
But that, you know, the idea that people get their, they get wrapped up in the idea that faith, because they have faith and they have knowledge in the religion, that it somehow is akin to goodness. It's eating mm-hmm. the menu rather than the food.
Yeah, it's interesting. I've never personally understood it.
Yeah. But you're not mad at it?
No.
Good.
Not anymore.
Nice. Nice.
And who knows, maybe those mean kids grew up to be amazing humans that give to the needy. I have no idea. No longer in touch with them.
Just assume they're good and move on.
Yeah.
There's a bunch of other stuff I want to talk to you about, like maybe off mic about the Biennale. Are you going to be there this year at the Bombay Beach Biennale?
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
I'm really excited about it.
I love that you're such kind of a fixture there and that you are able to paint on that canvas, literally, metaphorically, all that stuff. So,
thank you.
Yeah. I know we can't say when it is, but, I'm glad you'll be there. But people are welcome to go to that town.
Yeah. So you will be there, right?
I'm going to try to get there some. It's a tricky year for me. I got a big journey coming up in May. I'm going to be gone for a whole month. And that's, you know, when you do that sort of thing.
Yeah. Can you say where? Where are you going? What are you doing?
Oh, yeah. No, I'm going to, I'm driving across the country. My niece is graduating from NYU.
Oh, cool.
She's super, super smart. She speaks like Mandarin. She's a total badass.
What?
So she's graduating. So I'm going to drive out there and Tiffany's flying out and we're going to go to the graduation. Mm-hmm. And then we're going to just have like a Northeast spring. We're just going to drive around all over the Northeast on the coast and go to Vermont, go to Maine. I met a guy recently from Woodstock who invited me to come up and see his place. And so, yeah, but that's a big, cool. That's a whole month off of work and away from the people I look after. So I got to be careful where I spend time and how much, but
that makes
that's why I want to talk to you about your involvement at the Biennale. Off mic.
Yeah, okay.
Do that, I promise. But I think people should go see that town.
Oh, yeah.
Any time of the year, like go to the Salton Sea in California and see it. It's
always a fun time.
It's a really good time.
Get a burger at the Ski Inn. You might catch a show. They've been pretty active all winter.
I just interviewed is the wrong word for whatever this is, but I talked to Vera Sola about the Biennale. For me, like her music is almost like part of the soundtrack of that place. Do you experience that at all with her, like with her stuff? Do you think of Bombay when you listen to her?
Or? Of course. My first experience of hearing her. Oh my goodness. she was practicing in one of those shipping containers or something, what it was. And I was staying in a trailer, like not far off. And I woke up or something to hearing this theoretical singing. And I'm like, I literally drew, that's what it was. I was getting ready for bed because I was so tired and I'd been like working. And so I was already in bed about to fall asleep and this music starts playing. It just drew me out. And this was before the official Biennale. I think it was just like a little performance they did. Maybe practice, I don't know, but it was phenomenal, like a siren. I drew me out of the trailer and I went following. I'm like, what? Who is singing? This is amazing.
Yeah. That's a pretty sweet way to get introduced to somebody's music. That's great.
Yeah.
Well, I know we've got a few things to talk about and I've had you already for an hour. You're a very generous and sweet and loving person.
Blue, bye.
I'm so thankful. I'm thankful for kind of everybody in my life. I mean, not kind of. I'm just thankful for everybody in my life, but especially people who are caring and upfront, loving people, and that have creativity and a sense of play at the heart of what they're doing. And that's you to a T, man. I'm feel fortunate to be your pal.
Thank you. I feel that way about you, genuinely. Like talking to you is always a pleasure. Hanging out with you is always a pleasure. You are genuinely appreciative of good people. And more than that, like you pay attention in a manner that like a lot of people don't seem to. Like that, some of the compliments you've given me, I'm like, whoa, you see me. And that is beautiful. Thank you. Like I'm getting teary-eyed over it. I appreciate your friendship.
That's why we're pals, man. That's why we get along. Right on.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to hit stop on this thing, but I want to talk to you for a few more minutes. Mm. Say goodbye.
Okay. Say bye, man.
I can't.